Welcome, thank you. So my name is Mason Amaki, and I'm a program manager at the University of Pacific, and I work with Dr. Glassman, and I was able to get him to present with me so that you can have a little bit more variety. So we're going to talk about a values-based purchasing, or values-based incentives. Actually, we changed the name a little bit. Values-based incentives program that we are piloting or going to be piloting in California. And so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the background and our virtual dental home project, and Paul is going to talk about the pilot project. And as many of you know, the U.S. healthcare system is going through a lot of changes. And one of the number one factors is money. Money is always a factor. There's a rising cost in healthcare, and it's not necessarily related to any improvements in health outcomes. Other causes are the understanding harm of the fragmented healthcare system. There's a lot of evidence that different populations are not receiving much care. There's a lot of underserved communities. And people are becoming aware of these differences, and it's just more of a consumer empowerment kind of a world. So dental care is actually the third highest cost. It's right behind heart conditions and cancer, so we're spending a lot of money on dental care each year. And these expenses are rising at a faster rate than inflation, so that's not very good. And it's actually the third highest out-of-pocket expense right behind prescription drugs. So people are paying a lot of money for dental care out of their pocket. And if you actually look at people who did not obtain dental care, and the number one reason being financial, the percentage of the population who needed but did not obtain a certain service because of financial reasons, dental care was the number one health care service that they did not receive. And again, it's also going on an upward trend, so it's getting worse. People are opting out of dental care. And if we look at the visits per capita, it's actually declining over the last so many years. People are visiting the dental office less. The practice expenses for the owners is increasing, so is the gross billing, but then the visits per capita is decreasing, so people are going less. And if we try to break that down by age of the people who are actually going to the dental office, we see that there's a little bit of an increase for children, but not too much. I actually think there was some more recent data put out by the ADA, the Health Policy Institute, just a couple days ago, I believe, that reiterates this point that children are relatively on a stable, percentage are seen going to the dental office, and the adults over 65, there's also a little bit of an increase. Those are typically the baby boomers who have more disposable income and can purchase some of the services, but it's really the blue line that we're seeing a decrease, which is the adults, the general workforce is not going to the dental office, and we're seeing less and less, and this is going to be hugely a huge problem as they get older as well. And this is actually a new norm. We're seeing that people are starting to visit the dental office less, and this is not just a product of the recession. And no surprise, of those who actually are going to the dental office, it's primarily the high-income individuals. 52% of the expenditures are from the high-income families. The poor, the low and middle income are not really visiting the dental office very much. So while the traditional dental care system is primarily serving the wealthiest and the healthiest members of our society, those with the majority of the dental disease, which are the lower income, are the ones who are not visiting the dental office or any dental services. And actually a report that was put out by the Surgeon General reiterates this, that there have been a lot of gains in oral health, the science behind it, but it's not being evenly distributed amongst different populations. There are profound disparities between different ethnic and racial minority groups, individuals with disabilities, elderly individuals, individuals with complicated medical and social conditions and situations, and obviously low-income populations and those living in rural areas. There were actually two reports put out by the IOM. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this. And both of these had some themes and suggestions in them. In order to improve the access to services in oral health, we could use the chronic disease management. We could look at new delivery systems, whether it be telehealth, new payment incentives, new workforce expansion, which was a lot of talk and fussed around, and also drive change and accountability through quality measures and improvement. Last piece of data that I'm going to give you is that if we look at what actually contributes to our total well-being, the number one factor is our daily behaviors. You know, your diet, the amount of exercise, everything you do on a daily basis is what really impacts your health. Genetics, we can't do a whole lot about, but that is a huge part. But it's really only 10% of your total well-being is due to what is delivered in a dental office, the care that's delivered in a dental office. And we think of usually that being a big part of our dental care system, but it only constitutes 10% of how healthy you're going to be. So if we put a lot more effort into changing people's daily behavior, we're going to probably have a lot more bang for our buck there. So putting all of these ideas and putting this data together, we came up with the virtual dental home. I'm going to just go through it really quickly. If you have more questions about it, we can talk about it later. But I'm going to give you kind of the framework of what this virtual dental home is that we've been testing out in California for the past 5 years. It's really about taking a dental team and bringing services on site, whether it be in Head Start centers, schools, long-term care facilities, or going into rural locations, using digital records to facilitate services. So we have the dental personnel, allied dental personnel, which are typically the dental hygienist and a dental assistant as a team that go to one of these sites and collect the diagnostic records. So it includes radiographs, photographs, and those all go to a secure website where the dentist is able to log on at their own time and review those records. And we have actually collaborated with both FQHCs, health centers, private practice dentists, all sorts of dental teams. And when the dentist logs on and reviews these records, the primary decision that they're really deciding is this someone who has advanced disease and needs to go to a dental office because only a dentist can provide those services? Or is this someone who is relatively healthy and needs the services of a dental hygienist, such as, you know, just basic prevention and early intervention services? So the dentist decides this. But regardless of the decision, we always try to create the dental home where the patient is. So we continue to go back to that site and then refer when necessary. So again, the hygienist will do these community-based interventions and prevention. And we have been testing this out through 13 different communities throughout California, again, various different populations, different settings, to see what the results would be. And so we are trying to create a telehealth-connected team by bringing the services into the community and referring out to the dental office or clinic when necessary through these types of teams. And again, it's a hub-and-spoke model, so we can get the services out and use the dental office as a surgical suite for the advanced procedures. And through our pilot project, we have, actually now it's even greater because this is from the summer time, but we have seen about 2,400 patients. That's about 5,600 visits. And it's actually really interesting. So if you remember, one of the fundamental decisions that the dentist is making is whether the patient needs to be referred to the dental office or not, if they have advanced disease or not. And surprisingly, it's been uniform all throughout our different settings. Roughly 35% of the population, and these are underserved populations, only about 35% need to go to the dental office. And they're providing... or the dental hygienists are taking x-rays and placing these temporary restorations, as you can see from the data. And we just had a really important milestone that was crossed this just a month and a half ago. There's AB 1174, which was signed by the governor end of September, and it got a lot of media attention. You know, Washington Post put out some information about it. And what this bill does, it's going to take effect in January 2015. There's two components to it. And the first part is that RDAEs, RDHs, and RDHAPs can make the decision of what type of x-rays to take. And the second new duty for them is that they can place these temporary restorations in shallow lesions when instructed to do so by the dentist. But the second part of this bill was the payment expansion. So it mandates the California Medicaid program to pay for telehealth-enabled services, so the store and forward. So this makes our model, the virtual dental home, a much more financial and sustainable model. So I didn't really go into the first part of it, but it's we're trying to bring these three sectors together, which is a deployment of oral health resources and bringing the science and chronic disease management into these settings and using community-based telehealth-enabled teams. And now Dr. Glassman is going to talk about the financial portion of it.
Thanks, Mesa. So what you've heard is some examples of the compelling need we have in our country to do something different. That's no surprise to anybody in this room. The fact that we can bring together new science of ways of understanding that dental disease are chronic diseases and how we can treat them on-site in communities. This telehealth-enabled teams is one method. It's not the only one. You know that there's other workforce solutions being proposed and being tried in various states. But I think the critical thing looking forward is that we're going to make limited progress unless we do something about the financing system. So a little bit of background, and then I'm going to tell you what we're attempting to do about that in California. So I think everyone realizes that, I hope you do, that we're in the era of accountability. If you read the newspaper, it becomes increasingly clear that we have to be doing something different in our country in terms of the way we deliver healthcare services. Obviously, the goal is the triple aim, which you're all familiar with, but certainly improving the cost, lowering the cost per capita and having better results based on health outcomes is the critical underpinning of the triple aim. So one of the things that's been proposed as a major component of moving us towards a healthcare system that can achieve the triple aim is this idea of moving payment systems from volume to value. How many of you have heard that phrase before? About half the people in the room. So for those of you who haven't, the idea there is that we're in a predominantly volume-based payment system now where people get paid for doing more stuff. So if you're in a fee-for-service system, you get paid for doing lots of procedures. If you're in an encounter-based system, you get paid for doing having lots of visits. And if you're in a capitated system, you get paid for having lots of enrollees, and you try and spend as little money as possible doing that. Well, so the notion is if we're actually going to focus the healthcare system on having people be healthy, I love that concept, right? Having a healthcare system focused on having people be healthy. What a great idea. If we're actually going to focus the healthcare system on having people be healthy, why don't we actually pay for people being healthy instead of paying for something else and hoping what we end up is people being healthy? So that's the notion of moving payment systems from volume to value. Michael Porter, who's an economist at Harvard, has written a lot about this, talks about the fact that value has to be defined as the outcomes, health outcomes achieved per dollar spent over the life cycle of a condition. Life cycle meaning something like diabetes doesn't get cured at any given visit to a physician's office. Something like dental caries doesn't get cured at any different given visit to a dental office. So it has a long life cycle, and we want to be able to start to measure and pay for care based on the life cycle of these conditions. Process measurements and improvement are important tactics, but no substitute for measuring outcomes and costs. So that's his idea about what this means to be moving into this era of accountability and moving payment systems from volume to value. This is an example of how this is sort of taking root in our country. You know, in general healthcare, pay-for-performance systems have been going on for more than 20 years. This was just a couple weeks ago in Forbes magazine, there was this headline about UnitedHealth, latest blow to fee-for-service medicine, 6% off doctors' costs. And the bottom paragraph there says, the report is the latest signal to doctors and hospitals that insurers aren't about to abandon accountable arrangements that pay providers to keep patients healthy and out of more expensive inpatient settings. Well, we don't have inpatient settings so much in the dental care system, but we certainly are moving to an era where there are lots of people focusing on making folks healthy in oral health care. So this is just a partial list of all of the different sectors of the oral health industry that are now beginning to do work on moving payment systems from volume to value, defining what value means in oral healthcare, and figuring out how we can do something where we actually pay providers and pay people, all the actors in the system, for having the population be healthy. The Dental Quality Alliance from the ADA is clearly one of the major players in this, developing lots of new measures. To date, they're primarily process measures that's coming out of the Dental Quality Alliance, although there's some talk about wanting to move eventually into more actual health outcome measures. So in California, closer to home, we have actually in our managed care system, so some proportion of the dental care in California is paid for through a managed care system. A couple years ago, there was actually performance measures written into the managed care contract. Thank you, Dr. Eisman. Was involved in doing that. And this is a report to the legislature that just came out recently about the performance of that system. Don't worry about all the different boxes. Just notice that most of the numbers are less than, all the numbers are less than 50%. This is the number of people who actually get any kind of dental care on an annual basis who are eligible for the system. Many of them are as low as 25% or less. So clearly, and actually in the performance measures, none of the health plans are actually getting their bonus based on performance. So one of the things that we've thought about, is there a way to more directly move to a system where we would actually pay providers based on the health outcomes of the population? We have a HRSA grant that's actually funneled through the Department of Health, Department of Public Health in California, and we've been doing that. We've been a year into the design of a value-based incentive system. The idea was that would turn into a pilot project in California working with the Department of Healthcare Services that would actually incentivize providers based on the health outcomes of the activities that take place. So the plan goals were to have dental plans with arrangements that included incentives based on oral health outcomes of the entire eligible population, not the 30% who walk through the door of a dental office, but the entire population that's eligible for care, have a community surveillance system. You can do that in a pilot. You can't do it on a statewide basis, but in a pilot you can actually do a community surveillance system. You can actually get health outcome data on the entire population that's being served. And then not do what was done, I think, in California previously, which is set up health measures and then have everybody fail. What we want to do is have everyone succeed. So realizing that for that to happen, we have to do a lot of technical assistance to help the health plans and everyone in the system understand the things that Mesa talked about earlier. How do you actually reach the population? How do you get into the schools and Head Start centers and places where people are and deliver services that are primarily prevention-focused on-site? But the idea is that if we can have the right kind of incentives and have the health plans and the providers start to think about, I'm going to get paid based on the health of the population, how do I actually do that? And then they become hungry for the technical assistance that they actually then will focus on doing the things that are going to get the population healthy. The basic idea is that traditionally we have payers that hire dental plans, and dental plans hire providers, and providers work with the population. The idea is if we actually insert value-based incentives, that we'll see a lot of interest now, an interest in activity in community-based delivery of services, telehealth-connected teams, chronic disease management, actually treating dental diseases, chronic diseases, and doing the things that's necessary to make people do well with chronic diseases, increase care management and health literacy, and use evidence-based prevention. All those things will start to become of interest to the health plans and the providers if the incentives are set up correctly, and all that will result in basically the triple aim in the right-hand column. What we've done so far, we have an advisory committee, a scan of the national landscape, working with the Children's Dental Health Project in Washington, and we've developed a set of measures. We've developed a plan for an incentive system. We've developed an organizational operational system to have this pilot work, and we've developed an evaluation plan. The measures fall into four categories. I'm not going to list them all here, or three categories. They're basically oral health status measures, which we don't have any nationally vetted oral health status measures, so we're going to use a modified basic screening survey, STD basic screening survey set of measures. We're going to have a set of access to care measures. Basically, most of those are going to come from the Dental Quality Alliance, and a set of cost measures. And the idea is that we're going to organize the community, which is going to be the organization, a learning community based with the dental plans, the Department of Healthcare Services, the providers, representatives of community organizations, and consumers, to be able to be engaged and meet on a very regular basis to understand, it's a basically community-based quality improvement system, understand how this new delivery system works. We want everyone to be successful. We want the health plans and the providers to meet their incentive goals, to get their bonuses, but we're only going to do this if we're all in it together trying to learn from it. A very quick word about the incentive plan. We've talked to really many hours of people involved in paper performance systems in general healthcare. and have learned that what seems to have worked best in pay-performance systems in general healthcare is to start out with incentives just to participate. Don't try and come up with a whole bunch of put people at a lot of risk with a lot of measures that they have to meet at the beginning. Initially, we're going to be paying the providers and the health plans to be involved in just paying for participation and pay for reporting. We will gradually, based on what kind of results we get in the first year, begin to introduce incentives based on some of the measures, and then be able to gradually move towards a system where they're actually fully at risk for the measures we talked about. The idea is that with a set of measures like this, with an community organization, we'll actually be able to incentivize people to use the methodology that we already know how to do, which is community-based delivery and all the stuff Mesa talked about. But for that to really spread in our country, we're going to have to start moving towards this kind of system. And we hope that a lot of people will be following this and maybe doing parallel projects. We have a lot to learn about how to do this, but we've really got to begin. And we hope that with the funding and the interest that we've had from the Department of Healthcare Services in California, that this will be at least the beginning of applying value-based incentives to oral health systems and see if that really makes a difference in focusing people's activities on getting the population healthy. Thank you.